Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults. Here are your hosts, Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler.
Hello, this is Judy Davis, and I am here with my co-host and partner in crime, Sandy Fowler. And today, our topic is all about discussing parenting after divorce. You know, going through a divorce can be tough enough, but when you come out the other end of it and then find yourself in the pickle of parenting in this paradigm that you didn't design, that you may, you know, you didn't intend when you had kids, and there could be times when you don't agree, and everything just becomes this compounded, tangled mess, and it makes things really difficult.
Yeah, Judy, it was so funny because I was in a discussion with blended families, step families, and when I asked, you know, what are your biggest challenges, it was resounding. It was my ex and parenting, and we're like, okay, so we are going to take this parenting thing and we're going to run with it. And that was easy because I just turned to the best person I know for helping stepmoms through things and reached out to her, and she very graciously agreed to join us on the show. And so we have Claudette Chenevert with us today. She is known as the Stepmom Coach. She herself became a stepmom back in 1990. So she has got this thing down pat. She also is a Master Certified Step Family Foundation Coach. And she did that because she realized that too many women just weren't getting enough help and support in this. So she is out there. She provides advice and support and guidance to women who are entering that, what she calls the instant family realm. And if you're feeling overwhelmed or misunderstood or isolated, she has the answers. And she is generously sharing her time with us today. So Claudette, thank you so much for joining us on Mighty Parenting today.
Hi, Judy. Hi, Sandy. And thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be sharing some information with you guys.
Great. Many of our listeners understand what it feels like when it gets frustrating and they're struggling over ex-parenting issues. You know, they understand that whole tangle that they're in. But what does it look like for our kids? Are there signs and behaviors that we should be kind of telling us that tell us that there's a problem going on?
Great question. And, you know, a lot of times we focus on, you know, the couple, the individuals, the adults dealing with issues, but we forget that children are in the mix and are struggling and may not have a voice in able to share what their struggles are. So a lot of times, you know, what happens with children is that they're feeling that they have loyalty binds. Who am I supposed to love now? Do I follow my mom? Do I follow my dad? And if there's a step parent in there, do I follow a step parent? Like, do I give my attention, love, or, you know, my loyalty to a third person? So for them, it's really, really confusing. And again, it often depends on the age of the children. It depends on the circumstances around the divorce. If it's a really nasty, a bitter divorce, then it puts a lot more strain and divide with the children. And if it's an amicable one, which we would hope it often is, but it's not, then it makes it a little less challenging for the children. So when children start to act out, I think it's a sign of asking them what is actually happening. Is it their behavior or is it a reaction to the parents' way of interacting with each other within the divorce?
Mm-hmm. So can I dig in here just a little bit? Sure. When you see children act out, if we're talking possibly teens or young adults, what are some of those behaviors that you might hone in on that would be shifting in your child?
So if your child has always been like participative or respectful towards you, but all of a sudden starts to lash out is being very disrespectful, breaks curfews, does inappropriate behavior or dangerous behavior. Those are definite call outs for, hey, you need to pay attention, you need to listen to what's going on. Other times is, especially when we're looking at teenagers, parents have a feeling that I don't have to be as involved with my teen because they're teenagers, which in my opinion and in research I've read, that is the time you need to be even more involved with your child, more so than when they're little. So because they're teenagers, yes, they want to define their individuality and their independence, but when you're in a divorce situation, these kids are finding themselves even more confused about, where do I fit in? If my parents aren't together anymore, who do I stay with? Who do I, align with?
So we as parents need to, well, like you said, one, spend time with them, but watch what we're doing. Because there are two pieces I heard there. One was that these kids are torn, so we need to make sure that they don't have to feel torn. We don't want to say things and put them in a position to make them choose between the parents.
And there's another piece that sometimes as parents we don't realize is that the kids may have a tendency to think it was their fault, blame themselves for the divorce. They may feel like, if I had been a better kid, if I would have done my chores, if I would have obeyed my parents, if I had done better in school. No, they have this, they sometimes internalize and blame themselves. And so as parents, it's really important to let these kids know it's not their fault. And you may have to repeat this for a very long time. Just so that the kids know that, hey, you know, it's not your fault. And again, looking for those behavior changes within your teenager.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So going back to the behavior changes for just a minute, because there's more I want to get into there, but going back to those behavior changes, and you said, you know, if they are different than what they were before in terms of their respect toward any of the adults involved in this, breaking curfew and the danger type, thrill-seeking type behaviors, that was kind of scary. I mean, as a parent, to think that, you know, that their outlet is going to be these things, and apparently that's common that you see that.
Well, think of it this way. One of the things that happens when parents, couples divorce is that, and not all the time, but often, where the child will feel they can't trust you anymore because the family's quote unquote broken or dissolving. And so for them, it's like you've broken a very important trust. And so if there's no trust, if they can't trust a parent who for them is their world, right?
Yeah.
How can I, you know, listen to you or believe anything you say? And so, and that the teenage year is really even more challenging because that's the stage where there's a lot of self-exploration, trying to understand who they are, who am I? And so when their family is dissolving, then their belief in who they are just crumbles. Mm-hmm.
So you had said that it was really important to reach out to your child and talk to them and let them know that they're not to blame. But now we have three different adults in that dynamic. So would you recommend that all three kind of do that, you are not to blame? Or is it really the person that the teen kind of has that already trusted bond with, or how do you bridge that with three different adults that may look at life very differently?
Great question. In a perfect world, we would have all three parents, of course, but we don't live in the perfect world.
Exactly.
All right. And there's a reason why the couple divorced. And so for some, it just, they weren't, you know, meant to be together, and then can co-parent, which is great. And then they'll invite the third parent or the step-parent in. But in a typical where what I see more often, it's more like, I don't want the ex in our relationship. I don't want a step-parent involved in our conversations. So again, it's focusing on what is best for the child and putting aside your own personal grievances or your whatever it is that you're angry about. If you can put those aside, that's even better. So how to approach your adult, your teenager or an older child when you're dealing with behavior issues and you want to let them know it's not their fault. One of the great ways to do it is do it on an individual base. So let's say dad wants to spend time with his daughter and share with his daughter, like, you know, I'm not with your mom anymore. It doesn't mean that I don't love you. You're a different person than, you know, your mom. Never badmouth a parent, no matter what they've done. Always, you know, refrain from saying anything negative, because you're going to be the one looking bad to your child. Again, it's easier said than done. We're human. We all have emotions. We all have moments where we get frustrated. But if you can't come together, the adults together, do it on a one-to-one basis where you go out for a coffee, you go for a walk, you know, you do something together and just go together and spend that time. Even if it's 20 minutes to half an hour, you could do it in a car ride. You know, it doesn't have to be structured. But find that time to spend and just say, hey, you know, I know that I'm really sad that didn't work out with your mom or your dad, but I need to let you know that you had nothing to do with this. This isn't about you. This isn't that, you know, anything you've done. This is about you and your mom or dad. We just couldn't make it work together.
And we just need to keep doing that. Keep setting aside time just to do things you used to do, things you like to do together, daily normal things, doing chores together, driving places, whatever. Just keep reminding them, you know, give them a hug and I love you and good nights and just those little things too. Not, it doesn't sound like it has to be a big, huge deal.
Definitely. And I love the points you brought, Sandy, is that, you know, sometimes, and I have a tendency to see this in dads, where dads will sort of like put aside his responsibility to be involved all the time and giving it to, well, we'll let mom take care of it, or we'll take the stepmom take care of it, which isn't a good thing. Dad needs to stay involved with their kids, especially when it comes to their daughters. Parents need to see themselves as role models. They need to see themselves as leaders within their family, no matter what kind of family you have, whether you're divorced, a single parent, in a step family, you know, in a traditional family. You need to see yourself as leaders. And so dads need to step up and call their kids, or, you know, video chat them, or, you know, just be curious and involved with what's going on. it's report card time. Just tell them, hey, I think you have a report card coming. You know, how are you doing? How is it going? Do you need help with anything? And I'm talking about dads because this is what I've seen more. It doesn't mean moms don't do it, but it typically I've seen dads sort of like stand back or pull away from, you know, continuing to be involved or stepping up to be more involved within their with their children's life.
So there was something that you touched on there, Claudette, that made me think of kind of tying a couple things together that you have said. I love this. I love this. Just stay involved in your kid's life. It's the same parenting advice we had before divorce. It's just that you're going to be doing that separately now. And you're and it's good probably for the kids for them to get a double dose of that for a while. But you said be a leader, be a role model. Earlier, excuse me, you said that kids will act out as a reaction to the way parents were interacting with each other, particularly through the divorce. So what I'm hearing is that we need to be the people we want our kids to be, even towards this person by whom we are so hurt.
Definitely. And I mean, this is a lifelong legacy that we're doing. It's not just that once our kids turn 18, we're done and we can act out. You are a parent for the rest of your natural life. And as long as children are there. And so that means you need to be role models and leaders to them, because I have a 35-year-old son and our stepdaughters are 35 and 36. And so we still need to be role models for them, for to help them become better parents themselves now that they have children. And so it never stops. So it doesn't matter the age of the children. Always think that whatever you're doing, the way you're behaving, and the way you're treating your ex-spouse is a way you're teaching your children to treat other people, whether it's a friend, a sibling, a parent, a step-parent, anybody in their lives. So always be conscious that the way you behave is how your children are learning to treat other people.
No matter how the other person's behaving toward you.
It's interesting that you bring that up, because so often when I see a dynamic where you have mom, dad, and ex, and sometimes there's four, you know, both sides remarry, and the kid becomes this ping pong ball that goes back and forth and played against the other. And if you're a parent listening today, how do you stop that? How do you stop using your kids to manipulate a situation? Because in essence, that's what we're doing if you kind of dig in like that. So what would you recommend?
Oh, definitely. Another great question. Well, you know, the aspect of ping pong, children do it to parents, whether you're in a traditional family. And, you know, I've done it to my parents where I would ask my mom something, and if she said no, I would ask my dad something and he would say yes. And then because I knew they hadn't talked to each other, which is a big no-no.
Right. Right?
And so kids will naturally do this. So if you are aware, and you should be, that kids do this, you know, as an adult, you need to ask yourself, did he or she ask the other parent about this situation? And ask your child, like, did you ask mom or dad what they thought about you staying away or past your curfew this coming weekend? Or did you ask mom or dad whether it was okay for you to buy that dress? And if you're not sure, as a parent, it would be your responsibility and the best interest in your child's life to ask the other parent, even if it's a text, even if it's, you know, an email or something. You know, when you put your children, the responsibility of being a parent and focusing on your child's well-being first, it helps you to realize, like, wow, you know, I want what's best for them. I know it's hard. I really don't want to talk to this, my ex. I don't want to talk to him. But if I want my child to grow up being stable and being, you know, getting the best out of everything, I will definitely take the time to email, message, text, whatever it takes to be in contact. You don't want to talk to this person face to face. I get it. I hear it, and I hear it a lot. But you, with technology today, you can text, you can send an email. Just a simple question. You know, Brianna asked me to stay out past her curfew. Did you agree to this, yes or no? You know, no accusations, no assumptions. Just a simple, straightforward question and respond with that same courtesy. I think that we forget that because you're ex-spouses or that you are a step-parent involved, that all of a sudden you forget your manners and you forget to treat other people as human beings. Would you be treating your neighbor, a colleague at work, with this manner? You know, all your emotions, that frustrations are there, don't need to be put in place where you're making the children feel uncomfortable or unloved, unwanted.
So, you know, we've been talking about some of the things that we as parents do that contribute to this. And I want to just take a step for a moment really far from this perfect world. And so, you know, like you said, you got divorced for a reason. If you aren't getting along, there's also a fair chance that you don't agree on parenting practices. When you're in the same house, it can be hard enough. Now you have two different houses where two different parents can completely establish their own sets of rules and, you know, based on their beliefs and their values. All this communication, all of this, how do you deal with that when you are basically maybe diametrically opposed? Mm-hmm.
And so, again, you know, there's a reason why people got divorced, and oftentimes it's because of different points of views, lifestyle, values, beliefs, expectations. And so when you're divorced and living in separate homes, that may just exasperate. That may grow even to be more different. The thing to ask yourself is, am I setting different rules and house rules and expectation to spite my ex, or is it because this is what I truly believe? So, you know, there are programs in place to help you. You can go to mediation, you can go to parenting classes that I really encourage people to do after they get a divorce, because if you are really emotionally charged about your ex, you are still attached to this person, meaning that when you do decide to remarry at some point or have like taken a new partner, you're bringing in all that baggage to your new relationship. So if you want to start with a clean slate and have a happier relationship, you need to deal with the emotions of the past so that you're not bringing them to the new relationship. Also, you know, look at what it is that is best for the child, like curfews and, you know, and house rules. And yes, there's going to be differences. And so this is where you need to tell your child, in this house, this is how we function. I understand that your mom or dad's, it's going to be different. And I can't do anything about it. Here in our home, while we're in this home, this is how it works. And the way I see it is that when we go to school, when our kids go to school, they have a set of rules that are different from home. They don't necessarily live by the same rules as our house. when they go to school. When you go to work, you have different sets of values and rules. And so we're teaching, use this moment as a teaching tool to teach your child that there are different sets of rules and values and way of functioning in different environments.
That's awesome, Claudette. And I'm sorry, we have so many more questions, but we have to wrap things up. And I just kind of want to backtrack for a second and go, okay, so during the time of a divorce or right after, when things are difficult already, it can be easy to just get frustrated with our kids acting out. But we need to look at that and go, hey, is this their reaction to the divorce? And not saying that you dismiss it, but deal with it calmly and carefully, and make sure that you are rebuilding that foundation for them, letting them know that they are loved. You said that, you know, each parent, their biological parents, any step parents, everybody can spend time with them and little daily things, bigger things, remind them that they're loved. But basically, we need to focus on what's best for the child. And a few things we could do there, you said, were to put aside our personal grievances and our anger. Be a role model. Be the person that you want your child to be. There's a tall order. And communicate. All the parents involved need to communicate, and that it's okay for us to have different roles and to use those differences as a learning tool. I love everything you went through, Claudette. For people who are going, yes, I want more, where can they go to get more from you?
Definitely. So if you want to learn more about, you know, how to be an empowered parent or a step parent, go to my website, which is stepmomcoach.com. Also, I have a program, an online program, which is called The Road to Becoming an Empowering Step Parent. It's also great for parents. And if you're listening to this podcast and want to enroll, there's a special coupon just for people on this program, and it's called Winter Sale. And so, again, if you want more questions, more answers or help, go to stepmomcoach.com, and I'll be happy to answer your questions.
And the sale price you promised us would be good forever, even if it's not winter wherever you're at.
Wait, no matter what. And you get 50% off for this program. So, yes, definitely.
That's awesome, Claudette. Thank you so much for being here. It has been such an enlightening show. And now it is time to dig into Real Talk right after these messages.
Parenting is the toughest job you'll ever love. It's a common phrase because it's so true. And as the teen years roll around and you start seeing changes in your child and you may start wondering, what's going on? Are they okay? Is this normal? And again, as they move out of the house, go out on their own, go off to college, you see more changes. And sometimes the changes are perfectly normal. And sometimes they're an indication that your child's in over their head, that there are things going on that they can't handle. And the parents' worry and their concern is, how do I know the difference? Well, now there's a book that can tell you. It's Warning Signs, and it is a parenting guide to help you understand about those changes and to help you figure out if your child could be at risk for depression, addiction, or suicide. The book will take you by the hand, walk you through that understanding, give you the confidence to be able to take the next step, to have a conversation or whatever it is that you need to do, and to give you some idea on some of the paths that you can follow. You can go to dasium.net to the store in the shop there and get your own copy.
So, welcome back. It is time for Real Talk, and it's my week again to pick the topic. So, I don't know. Judy's been really generous about that. It seems like I've gotten more topics than her. But yeah. Anyhow, I have been noticing, oh my gosh, over the last few months, actually, a lot of things in the news about people reaching out to Apple to solve our tech problems, not in a traditional way, but going, Apple, can you take responsibility for addiction? Apple, can you make the phone a little different so we can ignore it more? Apple, can you do these things? Right. And it's interesting. There's that whole piece of, you know, social responsibility and everything, but that's not what I want to talk about. It just, seeing all that made me think more about my phone use, my family's phone use, because I do try to keep an eye on that. We don't want people getting addicted to devices, right, Jude?
Sure.
I mean, that is actual, honest to goodness, full-blown addiction in all the levels in between.
Right.
And I go, I have
it
no problem.
It won't happen
with that.
To me.
It wouldn't happen to me, right? But I was using my phone for my alarm because I love the alarm clock feature. I love that. A lot of times I'll wake up just when the face lights up before the sound even goes off.
Yep.
And it never wakes my husband because I always hear it long before his, because I don't want to listen to those nasty alarms. He doesn't want to.
Right.
But I decided to move my phone out of my room and just did something else for alarms for a little while. And it was interesting because what I realized was that my first inclination when I woke up, when the phone was there, was to pick it up and just take a peek and see, was there an important email? Mm-hmm. What happened on Facebook? And I'm like, it's somewhere between 4 and 6 a.m.
Right.
None of that matters. Or I just noticed I'm tuned in to all the little dings and the pings. And if my phone isn't next to me, if I'm eating lunch, I'll be like, oh, and I have to stop myself from getting it.
It's interesting because when you say that, because it's almost as if our lives have become so entwined with our cell phone. I mean, we carry around something that connects us to the world 24/7. Yeah. And if we don't have that tether, we're getting to the point where we feel like something's missing.
Yes, that's it. And that's the scary part to me.
Well, I had to laugh because, you know, we never know what topic we're picking for Real Talk. But as you brought that up today, Jeff has been in the field. My husband's been in the field for
and for people who don't know, Judy's husband's in the military. So he's out playing boys.
Blowing up crap. So, but he was out in the field and it was kind of local, but out in the woods and things like that. So he took one of our battery packs just to have, be able to call if he needed to or things like that. Well, the battery pack didn't work properly. And he came home and he said at one point he was so angry at himself, not because he didn't have a phone, but because he was angry that he didn't have a phone. Here he was out in nature, and my husband's the person that fought tooth and nail. He loved his little flip phone. It wasn't even a texting phone. He was angry when he had to move up to a smartphone because he didn't need all of that. And while he was in the field, he couldn't have access to the pings and bings, and he lost it. I mean, he was angry. And it's that tether thing, and it has to mess with our lives.
Yeah. That's the piece. It's like, what? So, you know, it just got me stepping back. And I guess I'm inviting you, inviting everybody who's listening to maybe, you know, take this journey with me and feel free to hold me accountable. You know, come on the Mighty Parenting Facebook group and ask, Sandy, how's that going with the phone? Because I don't feel like it's a problem or I'm addicted. We don't have our phone at the table. You know, when we have other people over, I'm not looking at my phone and texting. But like, is that really the yardstick I want? And it's not, because what I've noticed is it's that feeling, you know, and you talked about, Judy, you talked about feeling like, you know, something's missing or that we are missing something.
Right.
The ability to amuse or entertain ourselves. I sit in a doctor's office and I will tell you, I am the person who hauled a book with me everywhere. Now I haul my Kindle with me everywhere. And sometimes I'll have three or four books going because I have my business book and I have a Kindle book so that I can haul that with me easily. And then I have a physical book because that's what I wanted to read. But nobody is talking to each other. Nobody is just sitting and kind of staring off into space and daydreaming. If you have more than, honestly, I'm thinking it's about 5 seconds that you have to sit. Everybody's whipping out a phone to entertain us, to amuse us, to take our attention.
Well, and I'm going to kind of go a little bit of a tangent on that, because now you lose your personal connection. You lose that little chit chat with the lady at the doctor's office that might have kids your kids' age and of, you know, 5 years ago, it would turn into a coffee and a relationship.
Yeah, how many moms complain, I have so much trouble making new friends? This is one reason. Not the only one. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying one.
Go to the playground, go to the indoor, you know, McDonald's. The parent, we as parents, before cell phones and everything, we'd have to be sitting there and just twiddling our thumbs. So of course you're talking to the other mom.
Exactly, yes.
And then you see your kids are playing, you're talking, you have a great conversation. Next thing, well, you know, we're going to go to the park on Tuesday. You want to meet up there. And the relationship builds. Yeah. Now everyone's like this, connecting to their friends on Facebook, and they miss the personal connection, which only fuels the addiction of needing to be tethered to that smartphone. It's like a catch-22 evil.
Yeah, and you lose stress relief. You know, I mentioned the idea that we don't just sit and, you know, stare off into space or just be with our thoughts. We always shift our attention to something else. Well, that downtime is when we would release stress or work through something, let the anxiety go. All these things are getting worse. So, all right. I said people could hold me accountable. So what, you know, Judy, are you going to join me? Are you going to leave me hanging out there all by myself?
Well, I'm going to do something a little twist on what you're doing because
you don't know what I'm doing, Chickie. I didn't know you.
But what I try to do is about once a quarter, because I am on my devices and I've really cut back on having it next to me while we're watching TV or having it in my room. I have done that. But I actually am going to once a quarter go for an entire weekend without my phone.
Ooh.
I will tell my kids or whatever that I'm not on it. And if they need us, they need to call dad because Jeff has to have his phone by him because of his job. So, but I am actually going to disconnect from my phone once a quarter for an entire weekend.
Okay. So what am I going to do? One is I'm going to actually go buy some other kind of alarm clock because I did start bringing the phone back into the room when I needed to have an alarm. And I had redone my schedule recently, which means that while I usually wake up before, I still needed one. So one, okay, I got to write this down. One, buy an alarm clock. Two, I think what I'm going to do is pick a time during the day and put on my do not disturb function. Because same thing, that's my phone. If I have an emergency, my kids need to get a hold of me. But the only thing that comes through on do not disturb are phone calls from people who I have highlighted and said they can come through. And if my kids call, I want to talk to them. That's not a device issue.
Well, and maybe that's what
a telephone,
I'll do.
I
go to that extreme, so I'll do what you're saying. Just put on my do not disturb. Okay.
So I'm going to give myself a daily do not disturb
time.
And three, I am going to, for how long am I going to do this? All right. I'm going to say for a month, although I have to admit, see, this is ridiculous. It's making me a little nervous. Right? For a month, when I am out and about and I just need to, you know, I'm waiting for the Geek Squad guy to do something or I'm waiting for the cashier to, not the cashier because I don't do that, but you know, I'm waiting at a counter or I'm waiting someplace for somebody to do something for me. I am not going to pull out my phone.
Okay. So I just have to laugh because when you asked me if I was going to join you, of course, everyone saw that my initial thing was, oh, hell no, I'm not joining you in anything because I can't commit until I know what it is. But so I just immediately spouted off something that I thought I could do. So I'm going to throw out what I said, because let's be real, I will check to see if my kids call or something like that. I know myself well enough.
I couldn't do that.
So
the home part.
Right. So what we're going to do is in the notes down below, you're going to write those three things that we're going to do.
Let's do the less tech challenge. We'll put it down below in the notes, but it's going to be the less mighty parenting, less tech challenge. We don't need to get rid of our tech. We just need to make sure it's not running our life.
100%.
And our emotions and our health.
Exactly. So we will just do a less tech challenge and we'll put all the details in the comments below and on the blog. We might even take this little real talk and actually upload this episode onto the blog so they can see our Less Tech Challenge. So anyway, I know we could talk about screens and all of that, and there's just so much, but we do have to cut this today's Real Talk, and I just want to thank all of our listeners for joining us today. You know, don't forget to hop on over and get your free gift on our website, as well
MightyParentingPodcast.com.
MightyParentingPodcast.com. One day I will get this final little thing all good, but those of you that know me, you'll come to love me for all of my mess-ups. But you can join us over there and on our Facebook page, because that's where we get questions for Real Talk. That's where we find all the things that you need and a place where you can connect with other parents. So thanks for being with us today, and we'll see you soon.